Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Today's Sunday session is brought to you thanks to the fine folks at More Beer. Visit them right now at morebeer.com.
I want people to believe in me, and I want people to believe in me when they taste my beer. That's what it's about.
You mean you laid underneath it and tried to
put his tongue up the bung?
I like to actually scoop up the yeast and look at it.
7 o'clock came real early that next morning.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for dumbing that down for us. You did an awesome job.
It's all about food and beer. You
punch me in the junk.
Man, that thing was thick.
The point is, just beat it like it's your dick.
I like to smell it afterwards.
Are you being sarcastic
no.
right now?
No. Bring your body armor.
I ran into my junk once on a ball valve on a kettle.
That's a true happy ending.
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's the Brewing Network here, The Session, the original home brewing podcast that no longer talks about home brewing because no one homebrews.
That's it. That's why.
That's pretty much. So thank you very much. Good night. No, I'm going to try to homebrew, man. I have a problem with my...
Oh, really?
My Zymatic. The step filter cracked, and then I couldn't update the software. It's a whole thing. So they're replacing a whole bunch of Johns. But once I get it dialed in, Warren, let me tell you, I'm going to be brewing.
So you were a little too rough with it.
I was a little too rough with it, yeah. Making love to the duck valve and just kind of didn't really... Anyway.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I guess my machine was so old, like, it wasn't taking the update.
Oh, it was a software problem.
Yeah, it was a software problem. And I didn't know that I had to do such things. And I'm sure they communicate a lot better to people who actually purchase the items.
Okay,
sure. They're actually on their customer list.
Right,
yeah. Since I didn't purchase the thing, I just, you know.
They might not even be pushing the updates to you.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So, and then I couldn't do it. And they're like, well, just send it back. I'm like, I can do that. That's fine.
That's something I can do.
But then it's 70 pounds, and I have to take it to the UPS store, and it's like, well, shit, I have a kid. I don't know when I'm going to have time to do this. So
that's a team lift right there.
I have 2 Zymatics if you want one.
Oh, really? And both work?
I have 2.
2 whole Zymatics.
One works, and then when I was getting, you know, those Johns sorted out, then something else cracked, and I'm like, God damn it. So I'm waiting, man. I actually have a recipe to brew. It's top secret. I can't tell you about it.
Because what are you brewing?
I can't tell you about it.
Oh, still.
Top secret.
That's some high level security you got
over
there. Well,
I can tell you off the air.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, look, maybe, you know, I can't tell you.
Is it a new beer style? Did you make a new beer style?
Maybe invented something new.
Yeah, it's a clear... It's water, really.
Oh.
It's just clear water.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You're going to heat it up, boil it, and then cool it back down.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that'll be great. And then just ship it out.
Yeah.
Package it up.
Put it in a competition.
see what happens.
Yeah.
Can you imagine just sending in fucking bottled carbonated water? Judges have to judge it. They have to give you a score sheet.
That's when you would find the bottom of what the BJCP allows a score to be.
Can you imagine getting a 13 on just a bottle of water?
Right. Very nice carbonation.
Oh, I think that would be amazing.
It's worth an experiment, I think.
What's the entry fee, like $15?
It depends on the competition. You could probably get something for less than that.
Oh, it has to be NHC. You got to do it NHC.
Oh, NHC.
Else it's not funny. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The highest level. Yeah. And then water it down.
Oh, do a La Croix.
You can make it any flavor.
And then put it in like fruit, and do it in fruit beer.
That's Kim Shimke, everybody. She doesn't know that you can't use commercially available.
That's true. You could clone.
But you're testing it, right? I mean, the whole thing is a joke.
Let me fix her microphone. So anyway, it would be really funny if
we should
did
do that.
Yeah.
Next year.
Hi, Kim.
Oh, go to hell.
How you doing?
It's great to have you here, Kim.
You know what else is great? The show is brought to you by More Beer, people at morebeer.com. They've teamed up with the great John Palmer to make 27 beer kits based on the recipes found in brewing classic styles, written by Palmer and Jamil. Hold on, I think I might throw up.
I wonder if one of them is a La Croix clone.
Never eat two Clif Bars before doing a show.
That's not twice as healthy?
No. They're like... I thought that they would sit like a rock in my stomach.
Sure, yeah.
No, that rock.
Oh, they're foaming up.
Rock is. I also had a gross beer with it too, so it's not helping. These kits are true to style and all within BJCP guidelines, enabling them to be easily entered into the upcoming competition. If you don't want to do water, buy two kits and get fast and free shipping from More Beer.
Yes.
Do it. Okay, today on the show, everybody, let me write that off, and where is it? Here we go. We have John Brand from Open Outcry Brewing Company in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I'm excited because John is a longtime listener. He did say that he listened to Dr. Homebrew. I'm just saying.
Oh, the whole time?
I mean, like 24 hours a day in his life?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. John, look, Chicago people are weird, man.
Right.
They don't
I was
care.
Just there. Bunch of weirdos over there.
they're weird folks. No, John's a long time being listener, and so I'm excited to chat with him. He's been homebrewing since 2005.
Whoa.
Which, oddly enough,
that's the anniversary of how long we've been around.
Yeah. So that'll be great. You can check out what he's doing over at OpenOutcryBrewing.com. So we have three beers to taste, and... apparently, two of them are NEIPAs, and one is a milkshake IPA. So I'm going to have to give John a little bit of shit.
And he's a long-time listener.
And he's a long-time listener, yeah.
Big fan,
so,
big fan.
Yeah, so we're talking, and Kim's like, do you think he did it to joke with you? I'm like, I don't know. We'll find out. But we're ready for it, man.
Yeah.
You're ready for it. I already feel ill
anyways.
You've
got two Clif Bars ready to soak them up.
have you had these milkshake? You're an IPA guy, Tasty. Are you a milkshake IPA homie or you not?
Generally not, but I do drink a fair number of them.
Even though you don't like them?
Well, people say, hey, try this beer. Okay, I'll try that beer. Yeah. Or like, give me that, give me number 70, the IPA. And I get it. It's like, it didn't say it was.
What's a milkshake IPA versus a New England IPA?
Well, I think it's really, really hazy. It's like silly hazy.
Oh, it's not just lactose?
Yeah. Well, I don't think so. I guess you could. No, I think it's just really, really full of polyphenols. Probably some yeast to get it that milkshake like.
I guess we'll get to learn about it.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Maybe it is like lactose or. I think it's probably. I think it's just the clarity, the volume of polyphenols.
It's even thicker.
Yeah,
thicker than a Snicker. Like thicker than I guess we'll talk to John about it. But
if only we had a guest coming on the show that could tell us what a milkshake IPA
was. Super appropriate. Yeah. But anyway, John will be on in the next segment, of course, and we'll have three beers to try from him and learn all about Chicago and the brewing history that's going on out there. And then he also wants to clarify a bunch of stuff about Chicago,
but not the beer.
And his he wants to focus his clarification on where he is in the neighborhood that he's in, because which is great. And I like that because I like it anytime a guest can come on and kind of redefine the area that they're in.
Sure,
I like that. Okay, Kim Shimke's here. Why is Kim Shimke here? What are you doing, Kim?
Nothing better to do.
Really?
Oh.
She came in and already
she
was complaining. She was like, why is it so hot out here?
It's freaking hot out.
It's 70 in Oakland.
Oh, I thought she was coming for the air conditioning. Like, she didn't have air conditioning in her apartment.
I don't think you need air conditioning in Oakland.
You don't need air conditioning.
Oh, because it's hot here.
I left Sacramento for a reason.
Yeah, what was that
the
reason?
The deal is I go broke living in the Bay, and it doesn't get this hot.
That's why. That's the exchange.
Okay. It's interesting. You made a bargain with the weather.
With the universe.
Okay.
And clearly it's going really well for you.
Yeah,
as most bargains with the universe tend to do. Okay, well, welcome to the studio.
Yeah.
Are you just here to hang out, or what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Is this your intro for me?
Well, normally it would be, yeah, but
since
Kim is really not very initiated in the ways and means of broadcast podcasting, let's help her out, Warren. Hey, so earlier in the week, Kim Shimke on social media posted a query looking for photographs for our fans to post in hopes to win a pair of tickets to the California Craft Beer Summit.
And festival
happening
three
in
days.
September.
Oh.
And how did that go, Kim? I know you combed through all the entries. And what was it again? What did we have them do? What fun thing did we have them do?
We made it really simple. We had them just take a photo of themselves drinking a California craft beer.
Yes, California craft beer.
You know, we got to keep it simple. They are
right.
Band yeah.
listeners. That's a pretty wide selection that they could have chosen.
It's as simple as Kim.
It's a whole state.
Yeah. A whole state worth of beer, some would say.
Okay, and you got some cool ones, and you pared them down to two finalists.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
And who's going to win the pair of tickets courtesy of the California Craft Beer Summit and Beer Festival, which is happening in Sacramento, California, September 6th through the 8th?
It's a great fest.
These are VIP tickets,
by the way. VIP tickets?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
To the entire John.
Oh, that
the
changes thing. Everything.
Oh, so I was waiting for some sort of, like... Drum roll. This is very anticlimactic,
guys. Oh, so you already picked the winner? We don't get to vote?
I sent them to JP.
You listened to the show before.
There was all right. I don't know what I was expecting.
Scott
some
took his
sort of
soundboard.
Scott
took his soundboard. We don't have any sound effects.
Yeah. Hey, man, if it's one thing the dudes in here are good at is anticlimax, okay?
Yeah. Yo, I believe that.
There you go. Warren's clapping on the one and the three over here.
All right.
Go ahead.
So congratulations to username Andy... Z Beer.
Andy's a beer, bro.
Andy's a beer.
We will be DMing you on Instagram so you can collect your winnings.
That's right. Good job, Andy.
Nice.
Kim will slide into your DMs very shortly. And you know what? Hey, look, if you didn't know about this contest and you don't follow us on Instagram, and I can't blame you, but if you want more stuff like this.
Too.
Oh, well, I can't blame you there either.
I should have taken a picture.
But follow the Brewing Network. Follow us. And so every once in a while, we do stuff like this. But in case you want to buy tickets, you can obviously buy tickets to this event. It's the fourth annual California Craft Beer Summit and Beer Festival. You get backstage passes to the California craft brewing industry, network with established and up-and-coming brewers, learn from equipment vendors and suppliers, and get a few tips on how to perfect and improve your beer. Because they have a homebrew track, too.
And then, of course, the commercial seminars are very interesting to homebrewers as well. So. Yeah, and it'll be full of brewers. It's a great chance to meet the California brewers in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. On the expo hall floor, learn from brewing industry innovators and pioneers, including Greg Koch of Stone, Rich Norgrub Jr. of Bear Republic, Dr. Charlie Bamforth of UC Davis, and Jamil Zanashev of Heretic Brewing.
Oh, I've heard of him before.
Yeah. Educational sessions include Sour Barrel Managers Q&A and Take Your Home Brewed Beer from Good to Great. Help you continue to hone your craft. It's 3 days, and at the end, of course, more than 160 brewers pour special releases and hard-to-find beers from across California in front of the state capitol. Tickets are available for 1 day or the entire summit weekend. You go to cacraftbeersummit.com.
I actually heard from a lot of industry friends that's their favorite festival.
That's what I've heard a lot of, too, man. It's a good time.
Yeah. If you can't get into the Firestone Walker Fest, this is number two.
Speaking of that, I heard that Firestone, I think it's this weekend, they're doing a lager-only festival.
That's
what?
Correct.
In
Venice. Their Venice Beach location.
Yeah, something like that.
Even
in LA
farther
somewhere.
Away.
I don't know why we don't know about it.
Yeah, why didn't you tell us earlier about it?
I just found out today.
Oh, okay.
I mean, when I booked my tickets, I was like, oh.
You mean when Matt sent you an invitation
two weeks ago? He slid into my DMs. He's like, look,
oh,
dude.
Wow.
That's how the good info happens.
Yeah, he's like, I'm a big admirer of what you're doing there.
That's
not throwing up Cliff Bars on your microphone.
One of these days I need to learn what DMs is.
I'll show you. It's sort of like DP.
Oh, okay.
But different.
In the M's instead of the P's.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
Because there's two in the M's. It's bar.
Right. How's that Cliff Bar?
It's fucking gross, man. Cliff Bars are great. I love them, but god damn, don't ever eat two of them.
Guess who's not going to be a sponsor ever.
Maybe it was a mixture of the flavors.
No. Because the flavors were dope. I only picked dope flavors. One was chocolate chip peanut crunch, which admittedly sounds pretty good. Now I'm digging through Justin's trash.
Admittedly.
And then the other was, it sounds like Idris Elba, chocolate chunk with sea salt.
Someone's into chocolate.
If you're going to have a protein bar, homie, you might as well get the chocolate flavor. You know it's going to suck, but you know, it's still good. It's better than vanilla.
Get a little unhealthy with the healthy.
I feel sick. Like, legitimately feel sick, man.
Wow, yeah, that sigh looked like something was going to come with it.
Like, I'm sweating. I have the Bevo, like, I ate too many burrito sweats.
You might need to step out for a longer break.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
You can turn the AC down to 81 in here.
Down to 81?
Right, because it feels roasting.
Oh. Speaking of roasting, not really speaking of roasting, but there's a new band out. It's a metal band, and I played it. I sent it to Nate. Nate Smith, because it's that kind of band.
To know whether or not you should like it or not.
It's a rock and roll band. It's called Trappist.
Hmm.
And it's a heavy metal. It's a heavy metal craft beer band.
Craft beer band.
Yeah, from L.A.
Oh, not Belgium.
No, not Belgium. No. It's a heavy metal craft beer band from L.A. Here it is, right here. This is called No Corporate Beer. The album is Ancient Brewing Tactics.
Wait, what's called Ancient Brewing Tactics?
The album.
Oh, the album.
Oh, I love the show, though. Anyway, this song's about whatever. All the songs are about beer, dude. Oh, cool. I had the actual like track list up, and I don't have it anymore. But it's
they have a shtick.
They have a shtick, man. And so,
what's their look?
No. What do you mean? Like, what do they look like?
They look like a bunch of brewers. They got the front of metal brand.
Do they have big bellies and black shirts?
Like, one of them runs a burger joint in L.A. called Grill 'Em All.
Grill 'Em All.
Which I've never been, but supposedly they're really good. And then the other two dudes they're just like beer fans, but they're from, like, if you're into that music, they're from kind of some heavy hitters in that in that area, like Spaz and a couple other people. Here's the track list. No Soldier Left Behind.
Hmm.
You know, the dead soldiers where there's like half a beer left, whatever.
Yeah.
This Means Wart.
How can you play that song?
Hymn to Ninkasi, because there's only like three tracks out, right? Yeah. Okay. Waiting in Line.
Is that about Pliny?
Apparently. Giving the Boot to Reinheit's Geboot.
Oh, jeez.
Some name I can't pronounce. 99 Problems But a Beer Ain't One.
Mm-hmm.
To the Pint. Waiting in Line, the third stanza. Wolves in the Tap Room. Final Gravity.
Ooh.
Is the final one too. So anyway, if you're into that weird ass music, man, Trappist.
All right,
check them out.
If you like rockin' puns,
I had a good time with it.
I love a good rockin' pun.
Not me, man. God.
You just spent like 2 minutes promoting this.
It was a good time. I don't know. What do you want from me? All right. I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna take a break. And then we're going to get John on the line here and start tasting some beers.
Perfect.
And I'm excited about it because you know, as much as I complain about beers that I don't like, I'm excited to try beers that I've never had before. And I can, honest to God, hand to Christ, I've never had a milkshake IPA before in my entire life.
They bring all the boys to the yard.
Hmm.
I don't
that
think...
That joke had to be made at some
point. Did it?
Well, I did. So
here, hold on. Let me turn Kim's headphones off so she can't hear this. What if we just told her at the break that the show's
done.
Over? Thank you, Tasty. Yeah. That we're done.
Roll the song.
It was Tasty's idea, even.
Sure.
So I can't. She can't get mad at me. But then she won't come back.
Right.
And then she'll go.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think it'll work?
Let's try it.
Okay.
Tonight's show is brought to you by More Beer. Everything.
All right, everybody, thanks for hanging out. We're going to take a break real fast. We're going to be back with John Brand, owner and brewer of Open Outcry Brewing in Chicago.
Chicago.
Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch
out! Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can. Featuring...
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of...
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the five-star solution. Visit fivestarchemicals.com or call 800-782-7019, 800-782-7019, and get the five-star treatment today.
Tuned into this session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
Welcome back to the Brewing Network. It's the session. Before we get John on the phone, which I totally forgot to do during the break because I was trying not to lose two Cliff Bars, I want to tell you guys about Suds Duds Society.
Oh, right.
Start supporting small beer one tee at a time with Suds Duds Society, the brewery t-shirt membership, where members receive a t-shirt, beer merch, and a homebrew recipe from a different brewery each month. A portion of each membership will go to the highlighted brewery and to sponsor a local homebrew club in their area. Join the society in the month of July to receive two additional pieces of throwback beer merch and homebrew recipes with your first brewery package. Become a member by going to sudsdudssociety.com and use promo code BNARMY at checkout to receive a discount on top of the throwback beer merch and homebrew recipes. I love it.
Yeah.
Suds Duds, bam, bam. Cool dude. Cool dude at Suds Duds, man. I hope they make it. I like anybody who's trying to give away homebrew recipes, because God knows we need actual proven recipes. You remember this back in the day, Tasty, where you would go onto the internet to get a recipe? Oh,
the bulletin board, is that called? Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, yeah. And it's like, well, I have 89 recipes, and they're like all using Black Patent. I'm like, well, hold on a second. I know that this isn't necessarily the greatest recipe in the world.
A bunch of recipes.
Why do you hate Black Patent?
Well, in a pale ale, it doesn't really work all that well.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I just mean like, the more often that beer recipes are tried and true, and I feel that's a good thing, and I feel like homebrewing in 95 or 2000 even wasn't where it is now.
Well,
even
there were no standards to speak.
Oh, sure.
No, not at all. Well, and especially, I don't know. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, what everybody else called a porter was like another guy's stout. I mean, it's what they just did what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
If you liked it, you put your recipe out there on the internet.
For sure.
Some unsuspecting person get it and make a beer that didn't want.
Yeah, well, and you know, nowadays, you know, if you're trying out a beer for the first time, you want to make sure people have brewed it before and it tastes good.
It's much more information.
And yeah, now it's so much easier. But back then, it's like, oh yeah, I don't get into town very often, yeah. But when I do, I really like to make some homebrew beer. Yeah, the recipes probably aren't going to be great. John, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, man, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I'm like lost all of my paperwork right now.
You just had it organized.
I know. I don't know. I have so many friggin' papers, dude. What the hell's going? Where are my Johns?
Which Johns?
God damn it, John. Hang on a second, man. I got some business to take care of, and I literally can't find a single. Thank you very much.
Well, that didn't take Bevo very long.
He took her long and walked from down the hall.
All right. Well, look, let's skip what I was going to do. John Brand, Open Outcry Brewing Company, Chicago. Now, you, sir, were a BN listener. You've been a Brewing Network listener for how many years? I'm going to guess 25 years.
Not 25. I started homebrewing in 2005. To everything, frankly. I mean, it was on all the time when I was brewing, taking the train to work, in the car, listening to a lot of hours of you, Justin, Jamil, Moscow, Vivo, Tasty. Yeah, so it's a little fanboy right now talking. It's nice to be on the show.
Well, you know, anything you want to ask us, if you want to turn this around and make an interview about us, that's fine. Kim is here, and you know, nobody really knows about Kim, but I appreciate you listening, and I was reading in your show notes that Jamil show that he did about opening your own brewery kind of spurred you into taking this path, right?
Right. So I was, you know, I'm like a lot of the brewers that are opening up breweries now. My story is similar. Started home brewing, educated myself through any content or information you can find on the internet, YouTube, the Brewing Network, anything. And the Brewing Network was really where I got a ton of brewing information. Jamil and Tasty for specifically, listening to Can You Brew It and those shows. I mean, I learned just about everything I knew as a home brewer through the BN. So they started doing a show. I want to say it was 2009, 2010. They did a series of shows where they walk you through step by step on how to open up a brewery, and I had given some passing thoughts to it. And really, when I started listening, I'm thinking, shit, there's actually a path on how to do this, and that was really where the initial seed was planted. You know, maybe I can walk this path and do this and get out of my life in corporate America and try to do something that I really want to do.
You were tired of making money.
Yeah.
I was tired. Well, look, you know, you do realize that there's more to life than money and career advancement and all that kind of stuff, especially when you start having kids and you go through those existential crises. I'm not saying I went through an existential crisis, but I did realize that stuff really isn't important. And to be able to do something you want to do is a pretty, and have the self-awareness to know what that is, feel pretty lucky to be able to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're still at the BN. We're still waiting to figure out what it means to make money and have career advancement. So we haven't reached that level yet. I'm just kidding.
Well, I was contributing to the BN Army. I paid my monthly. This is back in the day. I think I I switched credit cards a few times and forgot to renew. But I did send you guys money for a little bit.
Oh, well, hey.
Thank you.
I appreciate it very much. So what did you do before ditching, your secure livelihood for beer?
Right. So so my background is accounting and finance. I did forensic and fraud exams and accounting and operational risk work in the futures industry. I don't know if that means anything to you, but
I heard risk.
So you were catching risk, cheaters. Yeah.
You know what are you familiar with futures and commodities and how they trade on exchanges here in Chicago? The yelling and the screaming and the hand signals.
The only future I'm used to is the trap artist. You know what I mean? I don't really know a whole lot of Coding Crazy is a good song, but otherwise.
I've seen Wolf of Wall Street. That's what you're talking about, right?
Is it like trading places where they're trading orange juice futures or some shit like that?
That is exactly what the futures. So that is the best way to describe the futures market. So
it sounds hilarious.
What you think are the future prices on commodities.
There you go.
Right. So what you think may happen to the price of a commodity in the future is what you're trading on these exchanges. And in that movie, they cornered the concentrated orange juice market. So I did. I was in that industry for nearly 20 years.
Wow.
Again, started homebrewing in 2005, and it was around then when I realized, I'm not so sure this is for me. I want to do something different. And homebrewing became kind of my escape from that life.
Yeah.
And it went on from there.
Was your family supportive of your move? I mean, I'm sure the paycheck, transferring futures or whatever you did, is pretty good. And then you want to be a brewer, and then they probably looked at that bottom line and go, "Well, this is where we're moving to. We're transitioning down, kind of in the thing, so you can feel good." Or were they really supportive? Or were
well,
they,
I think
really
everyone thought
you?
I lost my mind, except for my wife. She knew how much how serious I was about this, and how much I really liked the brewing process, and how much time and effort I had put into trying to become a good home brewer and then transition in this life. So she was supportive from day one. And frankly, she got sick of me being miserable coming home and kicking the cat. And she said, figure out something else to do, because I can't live with you like this for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
So
either you go or your job goes, but the cat stays.
Right, good tactics.
The cat stays, right.
Was it a hard transition? Like your first day not on the floor, I guess, or not doing your job?
I was not on the floor for most of my career. I was upstairs, and the only time we ever made our way down there was when somebody shit the bed down there, and we had to go down and clean it up.
Right.
And the transition was not that hard, because I think I made up my mind a long time ago that I just didn't want to do this anymore. I was slowly legging out of it, and when I told my employer what I intended to do, they thought I think they were worried about me and my mental capacity or facility.
Like, fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious? This is what you're doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it. So spent a lot of time thinking about it and a lot of time planning it, and also knowing what I was getting into, mainly from, talking to other brewers in the industry and listening to your show and knowing that this isn't necessarily a glamorous life and you don't go into this to make money. It didn't matter. I knew that this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah. That's a great attitude, because obviously you can make money at it. There are those people out there who make money and they do really well, but that's a here or there kind of a thing. Like, it's never going to happen for every single person. It's not a guaranteed thing, and you have to do it out of passion.
Well, you can, but I think that those days, with how many brewers now we have in the country, are we pushing 7,000?
Something like that, right? Yeah.
Those opportunities for growth and the ability to sell your beer and your brand at the premiums they've been selling at the last couple of years, I think those days are probably maybe behind us.
Yeah.
It's not, if you open up a brewery in 2018 and you're your motive is money because you think you're going to flip a brand and make a gazillion dollars, I don't think that's going to happen. And obviously, you're getting into it for the wrong reason.
Yeah, and I think people opening a brewery and with the sole intent of flipping it, and there's a couple out there. I think like St. Archer was a big one
happened.
For that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
some
that's
say
gone.
Golden Road.
Golden
Road.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much gone. Also, like that's a very mid 2000s like mindset of the craft beer industry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So it's rare. It hasn't caught on as an investment in that the way that like St. Archer and Golden Road thought it was going to be. And that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did all right though.
Yeah, they did good.
They did fine. I don't know, man. They still got to work. You know. I guess that's the secret,
right?
Or that's the what no one tells you. You can sell out all you want, but you still got to work.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're, you know,
until you sell out.
Well, that's true.
So, John, you were equipped with your wife's support and not your job. But what was your home brewing experience like? Were you making good home brew, or do you have any way to measure that, or how were you doing on that?
No, at the beginning. I mean, it was dog shit, right? But you get
me too, by the way.
You get better. I was, I lived in Chicago, and I lived at the time when I first started homebrewing, I lived in a high rise. I had an apartment in a high rise, and I was doing the best I could. Modified the plumbing underneath the sink to accommodate a chiller.
Oh, wow.
Was starting to get into all grain, which is problematic, you know, living on the 20th floor of a high rise building.
Oh, man, that's rough apartment.
We had two bathrooms in that place, and I turned the second bathroom. The second bathroom we didn't use for, I think, 7 or 8 years, because that's where I had all the conicals set up. And it wasn't that, you know, I was never happy with it because, you know, like I learned on the BN, you know, temperature controls everything, and it was challenging to do that in a high rise. We moved out of downtown and into one of the surrounding neighborhoods of the loop. How familiar are you all with Chicago? Have you been here?
Yeah, north, south. Otherwise, I don't
know. I always wanted to.
Once for 2 days on a pizza tour, but I stuck to the north section.
Okay. We moved down to the south part of the city on the south side, and the house we bought had the perfect footprint for a basement where I could build a home brewery, a real nice home brewery down there, and pipe the natural gas to a more beer three-tier system.
There you go.
Bought some refrigeration equipment. So my beer did get my beer did get better at a homebrew level after a couple of years of that. But initially, no, it sucked. Like everyone else, it was terrible. So you just keep chipping away at it.
Mine was amazing.
So you got your tier system down there in the basement. And now you start making better beer. How did you share that? How did you validate yourself in terms of your beer?
I'm sorry, say that again.
How did you validate yourself? How did you know? Did you join a club and share with other people that knew good beer, or did you enter competitions? Or how did you hone your craft?
I did become a BJCP judge. I think in 2007. So that
that's a good step.
You know that you through that training and the sensory analysis training you get. You are able to reverse engineer off flavors and try to trace that back to where your flaws were in the process. So that helped. I didn't join any clubs, but I did hang out with all the clubs in the Chicagoland area, and just, you know, through that was able to talk about homebrewing with all the guys in those clubs. But I mean, when I say that I listened to an insane amount of hours on the Brewery Network and would listen to shows over and over again, I mean, that's no joke. I probably learned more from Jamil and Tasty than anybody, right. Probably.
Well, thanks for listening. We were your home brew club, essentially.
Well, you were. I didn't really participate in many competitions just because I didn't have the time because I was working so much at the time. But you know, I'd bring my beer with me to everywhere I went where there was somebody that had a discerning palate and a trustworthy opinion on beer and can help me, you know, try to figure out where the flaw was.
Yeah.
Well, then being a beer judge yourself, I mean, you just being aware of the beer flaws, believe me, there's a good percentage of commercial brewers that brew beer today that don't know what those are.
Right.
Well, that's true. Or they're fully aware of the general public doesn't understand that.
Right.
And so they know it's just going to get bought no matter what because it's a hot brand or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's how you basically just figured out that you were making beer good enough that people were going to buy is you were soliciting opinions, really, right? Sounds like.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I never had that much confidence. And, you know, I think good brewers are continuously looking for ways to improve their beer, identify flaws, and once you become confident in anything, you probably don't improve. So when I really started putting the pen to paper and putting the plan together, you know, I again, self-awareness and being honest with myself, I knew I had very limited experience at the pro level or working on production brew houses. I did have a handful of friends that had gone on to open up breweries, so I would moonlight with them and show up and clean out mash tuns and, you know, become a brewery rat and try to get in the back and try to get a little time on a brew house. That's difficult to do because there's so many people out there willing to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So I hooked up with somebody that moved in my neighborhood that did have pro experience, and I said, look, I feel good about making beer at the homebrew level. I don't want to kid myself and think that translates well to a pro brewery. I'm opening up this place in the year. Why don't you and I hang out, brew in my basement a few times a week, make sure we like each other and get along. And maybe you start with me when we open this place. And he had done time at Pisgah Brewing in Asheville, North Carolina, a real talented brewer, was there for, I think, 4 or 5 years. Had a lot of the experience that I didn't. So, Will, his name is Will Gobieski, still with us and does the majority of the brewing at Open Outcry. But he was really the, you know, knowing that I lacked that experience and knowing that I, you know, especially with all the breweries coming to market, you come to market with beer that's a little iffy, you're going to lose people quick. And I didn't want to, you don't have 3 to 6 months anymore to figure your system out, right? Fix your flaws. So Will and I brewed in my basement 2 or 3 times a week for about a year before we opened. Gave him the key to my house. I was still working, so he probably saw my wife and kids more than I did. But he would brew in my basement and
come over and do a transfer.
We would brew to
dry hop or whatever.
I'm sorry.
He'd come over and do a transfer or do a dry hop or something. That's what he needed.
Well, he would.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would. And my wife would be cooking dinner, and I'd be out of town somewhere, and he'd hang out with my wife and kids, which is a little weird now that I'm saying that on live.
But when you're living in it, it seems totally normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Right. Now that I just told the BN community, that sounds really weird. I'm not into wife swapping or any of that kind of stuff.
And I'm sure Will's an upstanding guy, too.
Yeah, he is, I think.
Did he give the key back to your house now that there's a commercial brewery?
He's there right now.
Will's a really talented brewer, and he's really bridged that gap between my lack of pro brewing experience mm-hmm. and trying to put out beers that we think Chicago likes. I'm not thankful that he's here. I'm thankful we met each other.
How many years ago was that, and when did Open Outcry start selling its first beer?
We just had our 1 year anniversary yesterday.
Oh wow! Congratulations! Yeah,
thank you. And I met Will in 2016, so I think we brewed in my basement for a little over a year, year and a half, maybe.
Okay. That's pretty good, man. If you can if you can sit and try to get a few batches under your belt and a good idea of what you're doing.
That's a lot of batches.
That's a lot of beer, man. What did you do with that beer? Were you the popular house suddenly in the neighborhood?
Yeah, we live in the south side of Chicago is a really interesting place. And we can talk about that if that interests you guys. Mm-hmm. But the neighborhood we live in is type of community that probably doesn't exist anymore. Everyone knows each other. Everyone knows everybody's business. Everyone raises each other's kids, which is both good and bad. But a lot of people knew what a lot of people knew what we were doing, so we had plenty of people that were willing to stop by my basement and drink all our beer. So it wasn't too difficult to get rid of it. We probably brew, I don't know how many times we brewed, but we did work on three or four core beers for that year that we knew we wanted to open with.
Okay.
And one of those being the cream ale, which is one of my favorite styles. And we must have brewed that beer 35 times in my basement before we opened.
Wow.
That's a dream I have. And how's that beer doing?
It's one of our best sellers.
Yeah, there you go.
The south side of Chicago was still a little bit behind the current craft beer, at least the neighborhood I live in. This craft beer movement that's been happening for the last 15 years or so. Mm-hmm. You still have a lot of American lager drinkers in the neighborhood. So the cream ale served as a real nice gateway beer for us to introduce people to other styles or other interesting emerging beer styles that are coming on. It's worked really well for us.
Was that by design? Did you design that recipe and start pushing that because specifically you knew what the demographic in that area were drinking, or it just happened to be you like that beer a lot and people hit on it?
It was both, right? So we're close to the Wisconsin border, so I had pretty easy access to New Glarus' Spotted Cow, which probably is the quintessential cream ale being made in the country right now. I love that beer. I started to try making it an inspired cream ale by them, years ago. So that's one. Two, yeah, I thought that it was a good opportunity to introduce our neighborhood and the South Side in general to beer drinkers that hadn't necessarily been exposed to craft beer yet. And it's worked very well for us.
It almost sounds like the industry as a whole in like 1998. You know what I mean? Where beers were being put out there to bring people who have never really been exposed to craft beer into craft beer, into the scene, into new and different flavors. It sounds like you kind of were almost like in an unexplored, like an unexplored territory, man.
I don't want to paint the South Side of Chicago as impotent beer drinkers. They're not. They're just think of the South Side of Chicago and some of these neighborhoods as, some of these old school major northern city neighborhoods where your old man drank Bud Light or Budweiser and God damn it, I'm going to drink Bud Light and Budweiser and watch the Bears, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. It makes for great community. And one of the reasons that tradition is one of the, that those traditional values are one of the reasons why I like this neighborhood, but that also lends itself to a little resistance to craft, I think. But I shouldn't paint it that backwards. It's not. The South Side is really caught up, and it's come a long way. And there's a lot of interesting, innovative breweries that are opening up in the South Side of Chicago and the South Suburbs. They're doing crazy shit like milkshake IPAs.
We'll get to your milkshake IPA here at the next break. But and I didn't mean that that they're just neophytes coming out of the the darkness into the light or whatever. But it does sound like they're not as exposed. They're not overexposed like maybe we are out here in the friggin' Bay Area where you can't throw a rock without hitting five people waiting in line for a craft beer.
Yeah, I think to say they're not overexposed is the better descriptor than they're underexposed. Yeah. There's a lot of beer. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's the delay. It's a little weird. I was just laughing at what you said. That's all. That it saying that they're not overexposed is a better way to put it. But so it sounds like you live in the south side of Chicago. That's where you wanted to open your brewery. You sound like very community focused, which I think breweries have to have nowadays. You have to be community focused in order to make it focus on your community, on where you live. Was that a hard decision? Because in your notes, again in your pre-interview notes, you were talking a little bit about the South Side has a bad rap. And it's, unjustified, and how was that to decide to open a a business in an area that you know as a great area, but other people may not understand that yet.
Yeah, this Chicago in general and its history with race relations and political corruption. The people write books on this stuff, and it's incredibly complicated and nuanced, and there's very, very, very real problems on the south side of Chicago in terms of, you know, violence and segregation and institutional racism and those type of things. And, I had the luxury of speaking as a white guy, right? So I haven't necessarily experienced all that stuff. But having said all that, this national narrative about what the South Side is, or how dangerous the South Side is, or how a wasteland the South Side is, it's just not true. It's not. There are pockets of that, and they're very real problems that people have been trying to fix for a very long time. A lot of people that have come up with ideas that are way smarter than us that haven't been successful.
Yeah.
But the South Side of Chicago is the community I live in particular is one of the most integrated neighborhoods in the country. One of the safest neighborhoods in any major city, one of the most intense sense of community and neighborhood pride of any place I've ever lived in. And all that lent itself to me buying into this neighborhood that I moved into and wanting to be a part of all that and trying to open up a business that contributed to that. And then knowing that if we did it, we did it well, and we opened up a place to accommodate all our neighbors, that they would in turn support us. And that's what's happened. And it's been incredibly fulfilling, much more fulfilling than chasing knuckleheads around in the futures industry that are, fighting other rich guys over money. So it's been a great experience.
Yeah, it sounds like it, man. It really does. It kind of sounds, honestly, if we can parallel it with Oakland out here, where Oakland still has a bad rap. It's where Shimke lives right now, and she has five cans of mace on every arm that she can.
That's because it's coming here.
She uses two here.
Yeah, that's right.
Before she goes home.
Oakland has a bad rap.
I don't want to downplay the issues.
No, no.
On the south and west side of Chicago, because they're very real.
The data is the data. Yeah.
When national politicians tweet about, how dangerous the South Side is, it's not fair. Fair is not the right word. It's just not productive. And it's not an accurate representation of what the entire South Side is. Right?
Well, right. They're using South Side of Chicago just to encompass everything that's terrible. But like any major city, there's pockets of good and there's pockets of bad. And you can drill down and get that detail in neighborhoods. It's pockets of good and pockets of bad. And you're right. It doesn't do any good to just paint this with a broad brush. Like Oakland. Oakland Oakland gets a bad rap for a lot of things. But, for gentrification and for having high crime and murder rates. But there are definitely pockets and neighborhoods in Oakland that are doing exactly what you are describing. Is they are, I don't want to say self-policing, but they look out for themselves. And it is a true community. It's blocks and blocks of an actual community. And everyone supports local business. And everyone is there supporting one another. But in the news, nobody wants to cover that. Everyone wants to cover the latest murder or the latest, police corruption or the latest government, hoo-ha. And I would imagine as a business owner that gets kind of frustrating. But even as a resident, that would be super annoying too.
For sure. And, to the extent that interesting, vibrant businesses are the way to, gentrification is not necessarily a positive word these days, but, I don't know if you have anti-gentrification, issues in Oakland. I do know that I have read about, some of the changes that are happening in Oakland. I'm vaguely familiar with it. There are neighborhoods in Chicago that are undergoing gentrification, and we have, some resistance to that. And I understand why, the ethnic populations in those neighborhoods that have lived there for a few generations, and that's their home, and, that's where they've lived, and that's where they've been raised, and then folks come in and drive up real estate and property taxes and all that. I understand why it's a dirty word, but
yeah,
these neighborhoods could use interesting, vibrant businesses. And it's no secret that things like breweries and distilleries and other small businesses that are embedded in the community and are become part of that community are good things for these neighborhoods. And, you know, our neighbor, the neighborhood that we're in, and I also don't want to be misleading. Our neighborhood was never really experienced the significant crime or some of the decay that other Southside neighborhoods had experienced over the last 50 years. So, you know, gentrification isn't really an issue in our neighborhood. But it did lack some innovation or interesting retail that had has never really opened up in our neighborhood. And I think that's one of the reasons why our community has welcomed us, because we're something a little different. And our business has been open to all the different walks of life that live in our neighborhood, no matter what your socioeconomic status is, or your color, or your race. And it's been really cool. It's been rewarding. And
that's
fulfilling.
Great, man. That's cool. It's a very positive story. You know, I like it, especially that the neighborhood's embracing that. And that's, it sounds like there's a lot of breweries opening up in that kind of neck of the woods in the South Side, right?
Say that again?
It sounds like there's a few breweries opening up in the South Side of Chicago as well. It sounds
like that
beer is being pushed out there.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Four blocks away from us is a brewery called Horse Deep Hollow, and they really were the pioneers in our part of the city down here. They opened, I think they just had their, I want to say their 3 or 4 year anniversary. And when they opened up 3 or 4 years ago, was, you know, everyone was like, Are you kidding me? Like a brewery around here? It's just not, everyone drinks American Light lagers. It's not going to work.
And
you know, I was one of those people like, first of all, I was really happy because I would have a place to go.
Right.
Two, they were really cool people who I'm still friends with and have really helped me in getting our brewery open. And three, it was something different that the neighborhood needed, and I don't think people knew just how many folks were out there looking for a different type of beer drinking experience in the South Side. I thought for sure that they were going to be proof of concept that this stuff works in that neighborhood, and it did. And they've experienced a ton of success. So they were one. Another brewery called Argus opened up in the Southside neighborhood about 10 years ago, and they've been around for 10 years. And they're mainly a production brewery.
Yeah.
And a handful of other breweries have opened up, I'd say, within a 10 to 20 mile radius of us.
Wow.
But because we're a little bit behind the curve, I mean, we are still not a crowded market yet, but could be if we keep going at the brewery opening pace that we're experiencing the last couple of years.
No, that's really cool, man. I'm looking at photos of your space. It's a great space, but it looks like you have bright tanks, like literally bright tanks behind the bar.
Yeah, right.
Are you serving right off of those?
We are. So if you look closer and if you zoom into that picture, you're going to see faucets mounted in the side of the tanks.
Really?
That's crazy. Yeah. Let me zoom into 1,000 for Warren so he can
put a
see.
Faucet on the tank.
Yeah, why not? It's hard to see.
Hopefully they're worried about cleaning the line. They don't have a line.
Yeah. That's all right.
Hopefully that gasket doesn't start leaking.
If you look at the bottom of that stainless steel tubing coming out the bottom, there's a butterfly valve on there that we can.
Oh, you're.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then you have looks like glycol. Like there. So what do you pump out from the production side into these brights, and these are your serving vessels. So people sit at the bar,
that's right.
And they're just pulling off. Wow, that's pretty cool, man. Is that and people?
It's a neat customer experience for sure.
Yeah,
you can,
it has
you know,
to
you
be.
You sit down at the bar and you order a beer, and the bartender walks over to the tank and pours your beer right off the tank. It provides a real nice a real nice experience for sure. People talk about it all the time.
That's pretty cool. You also have a food truck in your space. There's seats, and then there's literally a parked food truck in your warehouse.
Right. Right. So we're a brew pub. We don't distribute. We're an Illinois brew pub. All our sales are on premise. And one of the things that I liked when I traveled for beer, 10 years ago or so, was I saw this concept. It was actually at Founders in Grand Rapids, where now it's not like this anymore. Founders has obviously grown significantly, and they're now a national player, and their tap room is, 10x in size. It's a gigantic place. But back in the day, 15 years ago, you would walk in the place. It's a little bit smaller and a little homier, and you would go there to drink Founders beer. And if you wanted food, you would walk up to a food window and order your food, and then they'd give you a buzzer, and you come back and pick it up. And I always dug that experience. Right, I didn't feel rushed. I could drink as many beers as I want. I can choose when I want to go grab a sandwich or a bite to eat or something. And I just dug that experience. So that concept at our place is inspired in part by what Founders was like maybe 15 years ago.
Well, I mean, Anheuser-Busch money will change everything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Now they have three food trucks in there, Jason.
Yeah, right. Now they have food semi-trailers. It's a whole thing. What were you going
to
say, Tasty?
Well, no labor. You just, order here, pick up here. Nobody has to, you don't need a server. You're serving yourself.
No, that's a good experience. All right, John, I'll tell you what, man. If you can hang on for just a sec, we're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to try your beers, and then I want to get to a couple more points that you made in your pre-interview questions, because you brought up some good stuff, and I think it's going good so far, so let's ride that wave. You know what I mean?
Sure, cool.
All right.
Do they have waves in Chicago?
You know what? It's more of a metaphysical wave. Warren, shut up.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Stay tuned. This is a session with Open Outcry Brewing here in Chicago. Not here in Chicago. We're not in Chicago. We're in comp.
I'm the metaphysical one.
Whatever. I'm not feeling well. It's a session. Hang on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network. Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out, or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, there are amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from thebrewingnetwork.com.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high-temperature March pump, and either a top-tier gas burner or the new Boil Coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller, and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Check out their brand new patent-pending mash and boil 110-volt electric mashing and boiling unit. This compact all-stainless unit lets you mash, sparge, and boil just about anywhere that has a 110-volt plug. Double wall construction adds to efficiency and safety, and a precise thermostat keeps temperatures where you want them. Unlike insulated buckets and converted coolers, multiple temperature rest mashing is easy to do, all for under $300. They also feature the Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump that does the work of pumps that cost twice as much, as well as exclusive Brewer's Edge regulators and quality Keg King kegs and disconnects. Check them out today at williamsbrewing.com to brew their vast selection.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zanishev, and I wanted to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
Find Heretic beers near you. Click on Find Some at HereticBrewing.com.
Brewcasters are back.
It ain't 401 beer.
Whatever.
All right. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Before we get back to John from Open Outcry Brewing, let me ask you a question.
Ready.
Are you a professional brewer planning on submitting beer to GABF?
Nope.
As you're preparing your next medal-winning recipe, send some of your finished beers to White Labs for their next big QC day and save on a bundle of analytical services. All you need to do is purchase a big QC day test kit before August 6th, which is coming up here, folks,
yeah,
and get your samples submitted before August 20th. White Labs tests your beers for IBUs, alcohol, content, calories, attenuation. I added a comma because I really love English language. attenuation and more. They'll test for a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Learn more about this great cost-saving program at whitelabs.com/BigQCDay.
Very helpful information.
Big QC Day, folks. That's always a good program. John, are you still there, man? You hanging in?
I'm still here.
All right. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. The wonderful Beverly has three beers in front of us, and they're all cloudy, and I'm disappointed that you didn't send your cream ale. I'm going to be honest with you.
Sorry about that.
He doesn't sound sorry.
You don't sound sorry at all.
It's what I drink. We should have sent it.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
We'll send you one after the fact. How about that?
Hey, I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't turn down a good cream ale. So we have, let's see, we have the double dry hopped Louis Winthorpe. We have the Dodd Frank with mango, and we have open interest. Which should we try first?
You asking me?
Yes.
I would start with open interest.
Open interest. All right. That's the third one here, everybody. And which beer style is this?
It's a New England.
Okay. All right. New England style IPA. And you said these are popular. These are catching on out there, huh?
In New England's in Chicago, which I think it appears to be across the entire country, but New England's in Chicago are probably the hottest beer style right now. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same on the West Coast or not. But.
No, it is. It's unfortunately it is, and we had the guy, one of the Bissell Brothers guys. I forget the kid's name, but he came out here for the show, and he was like, "Yeah, man, I'm really disappointed because I really wanted some West Coast IPAs, but everywhere I go, they're just there's cloudy New England style IPAs." I'm like, "Well, yeah, that's your fault. Like you did this to yourself." Yeah. It's everywhere.
admittedly, because I've been busy the last year, opening up a brewery, you're working 120 hours a week, I haven't listened that much in the last year.
Oh, don't worry about
it. But I do know, JP, that you're always a little discerning with different beer style. What is it about New England that you don't like?
Discerning is the best word I've ever heard used to describe his problem.
That sounds positive. What I don't, I don't know. It's hard to just pin down in one sentence. I don't think that they're really IPAs. Even though now that they have their own style, I feel like the IPA section is a misnomer, if that's a word, if that's the right word.
Sure.
I feel like a New England IPA the ones I've had before don't have a whole lot of bitterness to them, and that's what makes an IPA an IPA. For me, aesthetically, the cloudiness kind of turns my stomach. And I don't know why. It's a thing. It's a reaction that I have. I wish I didn't, but I'll be looking through like Instagram and people posting these cloudy like dish rag water beers. I'm like, I can't. I literally have a physical reaction to it because it doesn't. It's not attractive to me.
It doesn't make you want a beer.
One of the things we're criticized for is that our New England IPAs are too bitter. Hear that frequently.
Which is
interesting because we still don't have a defined, we still don't have firm guidelines for what actually is a New England IPA. But we do get that criticism a lot that your New Englands aren't soft enough, and that's just a conscious decision we made. We like to bring a little bit more bitterness to our New Englands that I think you typically get.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that will make it a little bit more available for you, but
maybe I do agree with you. And tasting the beer, that is a very firm bitterness. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't looking, if this is like a red solo cup tasty or whatever,
sure.
Right?
If this is a brewlosophy experiment.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't necessarily say that this is a New England style IPA. There is a little softness to the water, right? Maybe a little minerality, but. But the bitterness is very firm.
It's very firm in this beer, which makes it taste more like a conventional beer.
Yes.
New England-style beers, to me, what they do to beer is they muddle the hop bitterness to the point where you could be drinking a hoppy beer. It just doesn't have that hop edge. This beer has a nice hop edge to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Tell me what's in this beer.
That is sort of bitterness in our New England's is by, a little bit by choice. We enjoy the softer New Englands, but this is when Will and I are sitting in the back talking about how we can put our fingerprint on a New England. Maybe we'll throw a little bit more Falconer in here, or a little bit more Amarillo, and that's what we've done.
Okay.
Well, then you loaded up on the what I call the permanent bitterness, the early edition, right? That's where you get a fair
amount of early. Use.
Yeah. How early are we talking?
Look at a 60-minute. How much percentage of your IBUs are 60?
You know, I don't have those notes with me. We go a ton of Centennial and Falconer right up front. Right when we're coming right off the mash tun.
Cool. First work.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Because I know a lot of people that do these styles. It's a lot of late hop usually to not get that specifically. But you guys are. Throw caution to the wind, man. Like you said, you want to make your mark on the thing. And I think for a New England style IPA, and we've had a couple on the show, Tasty. I feel like this is the most assertive bitterness I've had in one of these beers. Yeah,
not just on the show, beers I've had out in the world. This is definitely one on the higher end of bitterness for sure.
Yeah, and you said you get a lot of flack for that. How do you respond to people?
I wouldn't say flack. I mean, people enjoy the beer and drink it, but they are really quick to point out that these are a little bit more assertively bitter than they were expecting for a New England. And we just say, that's okay. Congratulations. You have a discerning palate. You can pick that up, but it's true. We are a little bit more bitter than you would expect for the New England for sure.
Yeah. What hops are in here?
That is Centennial, mostly a little Falconer, Citra and Amarillo.
Hmm. All right.
Good
what do you
combo.
Think? What do you think, Warren?
It's Munich, two-row, ton of oats, obviously, and some Crystal 20.
About what percentage of oats are you talking?
I have to do the math quick.
Not exact. Here,
four tree. Let's see. So we got about 475. This was a four-barrel batch, 475 pounds of grain. 100 of that was oats. So you're approaching
close to 20%.
A little over 20%.
Okay. Nice. That's and so do you think that's where the a lot of the haze and the full-bodiedness is coming from? Just the oats?
Well, we're a white lab shop. We use white labs, and we use their – I don't have the number in front of me, but we use their recommended yeast for New England's and hazies.
Oh, okay. So you think it's a mix of yeast and protein probably?
The Edinburgh Ale? Or the Bavarian?
Well, don't they have a Vermont?
I think they strain? Oh, I think they do, yeah. Oh, okay. I don't know what it is either.
Yeah.
The Vermont might – is the Vermont for Dippas or is that for hazies?
I think they have a haze-specific strain.
I think so, too.
I just don't know the number.
Yeah.
I enjoy this beer, but for the reason that you're saying people don't necessarily – I like a firm bitterness in a beer like this in order to get through – cut through the body, like the heavy mouth feel. Yeah. So I – on the spectrum, I'm enjoying this more than I normally would.
You are
for a hazy IPA.
I'm with you there. Yeah, what happens is like when the bitterness that kicks in, it's hiding that body. It rides below the bitterness.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, very true.
Do you think it's even? Well, I don't know why I'm asking you people in the studio, but I feel like it's even has a more firm bitterness than IPAs that I've had.
Some. Sure. Well, yeah, sure, in balance.
Like IPAs that we've had on the show.
It's a standard IPA.
Because it's still there.
It should be a hop-forward IPA, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Good for you, John. Thank you.
I like what you're doing here. Yeah. You're differentiating.
We don't catch it. I mean, people don't dislike the beer. It's just that I think they're expecting something a little softer with the New England. And
sure.
We just, you know how it works when people have certain expectations, even if it's still good, it throws them off a little bit. At the end of the pipe, they're digging it, but, it catches them off guard a little bit, which we're comfortable with. Like I said, Will and I, usually like a little bit more assertive bitterness in just about any style we'll do. You're going to find that if we send you the cream ale, you're going to find that in the cream ale too. I won't use the word aggressively bitter, but it's slightly more bitter than what you would expect in a cream ale.
Well, I'll tell you, I like throwing people off. You know, as much as I really enjoy
being thrown off
a two style thing, right? Like if you tell me this is a thing, and if it's out of that boundary, then it's not a thing. Mm-hmm. But with this type of beer, I'm okay with it.
I think you like the idea of fucking with the New England IPA drink.
Well, there's mainly that.
You get the spirit thing, and it's going to be a muddled mess of
a flavor and kind of nothing. There's nothing there.
And it shows them it's a nice hoppy beer. It kind of blows them away.
Yeah, most, I'd say 98% of the New England IPAs that I've ever had taste more like pale ales. They kind of fall apart and they're flabby and whatever. This is not that.
This is the gateway to IPA. Just what you've always been looking for.
Yeah, I know. I'm ready for it. What should we try next, John?
Let's do the double dry hop Lewis.
Okay, so perfect. That's the second one right
the
there.
Middle one.
Yep, or the middle one right here.
And so is this the milkshake?
No. Lewis is another New England, but we swapped out Citra with Eldorado and went heavy on the Falconer's Flight instead of Centennial.
Man, this nose smells like orange juice.
Yeah, this smells. Right.
And I don't want to say juicy because I hate that word, but it smells like tangerine juice. It smells like a fresh tangerine.
Well, exactly.
That's likely. So then we dry hop with Nelson Savin. So you're probably picking that some of those up in the Nelson.
Tastes like a creamsicle.
Yeah, creamsicle. Yeah, maybe a creamsicle and a Christmas tree.
It tastes like
a Christmasicle.
An orange tangerine LaCroix. Is that what you did here?
Less alcohol.
Right? Yeah.
We're on to you.
Yeah.
That's a very delightful beer. Yeah. What are the IBUs compared to the open interest? It doesn't feel as bitter to me as the open interest does. Am I wrong?
I didn't bring the theoretical IBU calculation with me, but because it's Falconer's Flight, you're squeezing a little bit more. You're squeezing a little bit more out than Centennial slightly, and I think we put a little bit more Falconer's Flight relative to Centennial in the open interest. So you're getting a few more IBUs out of the Lewis.
Does this beer finish as dry as the first
one? I'm sorry?
Is this beer finish as dry, as low gravity as the first beer?
Nope, they finished both the same.
Wow.
No, that's not true. Open interest finished at 10-12. I can't do the Brix conversion in my head. And then Lewis finished at 10-13. Again, I don't know.
Okay.
That's all right.
Close.
I can't convert the Brix.
That's okay. All right. That's pretty. That's hit pause. Still pretty close.
Yeah.
Are the grain bills pretty much the same, or are you changing those up as well?
The same. So,
wow.
About 475 pounds, 100 pounds of oats, 300 pounds of two row, 50 pounds of Munich, 25 pounds of Crystal 20.
And they taste like different beers. They don't taste
totally different.
Like the same beer. I wouldn't have known that. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Well, I think it's mostly the Nelson. I don't know if you've ever used Nelson before. It's a really interesting hop.
I have used it, but I'm not getting that this Nelson character in this beer.
Yeah. This beer is the first New England beer that I've had that I would say just tastes juicy.
Yeah. Tastes like orange
juice. There is a little bit of hop character.
I don't like
but
that word.
In relationship to all of the other hop fruitiness that you can get.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. This one gets to be juicy.
And just to add on to that, and I think it's what you're saying, I'm impressed with this beer. It's like, wow, you made a juicy beer without juice.
Yeah.
It still has some dryness to it. Which is maybe the bitterness, I guess, is coming through. Is cleaning some of that up?
I think that's the bitterness.
Yeah.
I think the bitterness provides the perception of dryness, I think.
Right.
That's my thought.
Because it's not a super dry beer.
What do you think the cloudiness does then for the beer? If you see what I'm saying? Like if you're making a cloudy beer that's intentionally bitter, to have that bitterness kind of stand out, then what's the haze doing for your end product?
You're asking me?
Yes.
It's the oats bring the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the haze is leaving a lot of that protein in suspension. So aesthetically, it looks like a New England. You're getting the juiciness. Like I said, the bitterness was personal preference. I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but
you're doing fine. And I don't even know if there's a true answer to my question. I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, I guess what I have to do, John, is remember that you are making this beer specifically out of what people would call the style of New England hazy beers. You want the bitterness in it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that I have has no real bitterness to speak of. So that's where the question came from. But I guess it doesn't really matter.
I think that if we were going to enter a beer somewhere to be judged, this would not be the best beer to enter in the New England category. There's no question.
You don't think
it
so?
It probably wouldn't score well because of the bitterness. But
yeah.
We're okay with that. I mean, that was a conscious decision we made because that's kind of how we dig them.
Right.
So how much is Nelson Sauvin did you put in, and where did you put it? Was it just dry hop, or was it Whirlpool? Or?
Just dry hops.
Nice.
We did. I can't read my notes.
but it was the only dry hop, or were there other dry hops?
Nope, it was the only dry hop. Looks like it was around 12 to 13 pounds the day we transferred into Bright, and then we threw a couple more pounds in there a few days later.
13 pounds into four barrels?
3 points. The Lewis was 3.75.
Oh, you're saying 13 pounds total, but of dry hop. That's still a lot of dry hopping.
It is.
Pounds per barrel.
Yeah.
Wow. It's very impressive. Wow.
I'd be very curious, somewhat self-serving, but to like take this beer to a centrifuge and then side by side it spun clear.
Just to see what happens?
Just to see what, if any, effect it would have.
Well, I'm sure there's some. There's got to be some mouthfeel.
Oh, no. I'd be just curious, because the haze does impact a flavor. I'd just be curious in this beer.
How much? Because how of much? The bitterness.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. All right, John, let's move on to your last beer, which is the Dodd-Frank with mango. Now, this is not a New England IPA, right? This is something called a milkshake IPA, which I've only heard about in passing. What is a milkshake IPA?
I'm laughing because Candy God, I said when we were canning these up and shipping them to you, I said, I don't know if JP's going to like this beer, but let's fuck it. Let's send it to him anyway.
You didn't know?
Really?
No, because I've listened to you for years, but I know how you are. But fuck it, we'll send it to him. So
there he is.
Have you ever had a milk? You've never had a milkshake before?
No. I stay far away from IPAs normally. Okay. Like just kind of that's my spectrum is to be far away from these kind of beers. But
he does like milkshakes.
I love a milkshake though.
Yeah.
Well, a malt. I like
right,
a malt.
Yes, malt.
Yeah. How much malt powder did you put in this? No, I'm kidding. What is a milkshake IPA? Honestly,
so a milkshake, at least in the Midwest or in Chicago, a milkshake is defined by the addition of lactose, vanilla beans, and a fruit puree.
Okay.
So you have 50 pounds of lactose added. Added to the same grain bill as open interest in Lewis. I want to say, I don't have how much Madagascar vanilla bean we used. I don't know how many ounces we threw in there.
That's right.
And then 120 pounds of mango puree. This yielded a four barrel batch.
Wow.
I might go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
And think that we've been tasting the beers in the wrong order.
You think? No, I don't think so.
You think the last one tastes like mango puree was added to it?
I haven't tasted it yet.
Oh.
It smells like it. You don't think that smells like mango?
The last one.
The last one that was in order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it might be good. Getting the Savant character in this one.
Mm-hmm. No, I get mango all day long, dude.
All right.
Yeah, I think the mango is incredibly pronounced.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't...
That's what, to me, at least to me, the one that I was saying was super juicy.
Well, and the...
No, I get the mango.
And the milkshake IPA isn't as bitter, right?
It's not.
Yeah.
No.
So, I did it correctly. God knows what you're doing over there in the corner, Warren. I have no idea.
I'm picking up in the order that Bevo set them in.
Yeah, no, then that's the incorrect order.
That's the incorrect order? Oh, okay. No. I mean, I didn't change the order, and I'm starting same one you
so
did.
So the open interest was the last one. This is the order. So 1, 2, 3, open interest, we move to the first, and then that's the order. But you were in the same room. Everybody else was able to do it, and I don't know why you were unable to do it. Even Kim, it was as simple as Kim.
She can see, though.
But, jeez, get out of town. All right, anyway.
Back to your regularly scheduled program.
Yeah, I was like, geez, this smells like mango. I don't know how you cannot.
So what percent of how much of the fermentables are lactose? Is it a 3-4?
So you're looking at 525 pounds, 50 pounds of that was lactose.
Oh. Wow.
So what's the math on that?
12%.
Less than 10%.
Yeah,
12%?
Like, yeah, something like that. Wow, cool. Doesn't come across really nice. No. I don't get a lot of that milk character, but I'm sure it's hidden by the mango that's in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, what is that? What does the lactose do to the body? I guess just makes the mouth feel a little bit more, I don't know, robust, a little bit less crystal malt, a little bit less slickness from the oats, maybe or something.
Yeah, it's going to contribute to body, and it's also going to leave some some residual sweetness to it as well.
Yes, it does taste a little bit sweeter. I think it's crazy that these are the same malt bills on all three of these beers. I think that's a cool... how's the milkshake IPA doing? Is it popular? Are people catching on to it? Is it a thing? I feel like such an old man, like dipping into my teenage son's room, asking what's hot right
what
now
the
on the Billboard Top
days?
200.
What
yeah,
does Buzzfeed say about this?
Yeah, like I feel so out of the loop with some of this stuff, man.
So what happens when you move to Oakland?
Well, at least in Chicago, milkshakes are kind of the new like. You know, 2017 was the New England. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2018 is, at least around here, is, getting, the milkshakes are getting similar hype.
Huh. Has this not caught on in the Bay Area, Tasty?
Sure. A little bit. I'm seeing a lot mm-hmm. more of pastry beers around here. Pastry beers.
The hell's a pastry beer?
I should mention that the brewery, at least from my perspective, it was kind of the first in the Chicagoland area to bring really good, interesting milkshakes to market was a brewery in Northwest Indiana called Windmill.
Okay.
I think in the Chicagoland area, they're considered probably they're probably the most sought after milkshakes around here at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we're friendly with them; they're real nice guys. And it was our milkshakes are somewhat inspired by them, and they gave us a little insight and a little help on how they design those beers. So I just wanted to mention their name. They're great guys over there.
Now that's the beauty of the craft beer industry, man, is everyone's trying to help everyone else make better beer. Right. So I appreciate that.
So John, I'm thinking like, okay, you're back into your South Chicago neighborhood. How are these beers received amongst people that are an old style drinkers? And I'm sure, I know the cream ale, you get them a beer, but don't they want more than that? I mean, what do you do after that?
It's been so interesting seeing a lot of these guys come in, and I think craft is, their perception is it's pretentious, or the fruits that we're using, and then you actually give them they get the cream ale, right? And they're like, okay, this place, I can hang out here. And then they come back the second time, and you're like, hey man, just give it a shot. And you can see it in their eyes. They're like, yeah, this ain't bad. They don't want to admit it. But, and then in the third visit, they're ordering the shit and drinking it. So,
we're over that cream ale.
Is there a middle step between the cream ale and one of these? Yeah. Or is it just cream ale? Okay, it's fine. I'll have a New England IPA.
We'll always have a more, traditional American IPA or a pretty middle of the road pale on that. People don't want to drink the milkshakes or the New Englands or something else more esoteric. They can go to something they're more familiar with. We usually do have something like that on. But we just start, if we can hook them the first time with the cream ale, we'll just go right forward and say, try this. Yeah. And more times than not, they're like, yeah, I can do this. I like this.
Nice. It's almost like you have to work up, but they have to work themselves up. Like, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. Well, it's like skydiving for the first time.
You have to prove to them that they can trust you with the cream ale.
Right.
And then you introduce something good to them.
Yeah. I do, and I guess it goes back to my earlier thing where it's like I enjoy hearing that there are people out there who are willing to try new stuff and to still branch out and to still basically help this community grow.
Yeah,
by branching out of old style and cream ale, which sure. I love cream ale.
Oh, sure, right.
But trying some new stuff. I appreciate that. What else do you have coming in the pipelines for weird beers for you cream ale lovers out there?
Today we dropped a hazy IPA with strawberry and passion fruit puree. We social media has been really good for us. We invest a lot of time in the social media. And when we made that post last night, as I was leaving this evening, there was a ton of people coming in and they were talking about strawberry and passion fruit. So, that's on. Some of the other things we're doing is, we started a barrel program. So, in the last 6 months have sold about 50 Journeyman bourbon barrels and stacked them in the back of our tavern. Journeyman's a distillery located in Southwest Michigan. That's about an hour and a half drive from Chicago.
Okay.
And we partnered up with them where we time our pickups with the day after they dump the bourbon. We drive out, pick them up, bring them back to the brewery.
Nice.
And fill them up with our base Russian. We've done two barrel releases in the last 2 months, and they've gone over very well. We're happy with the feedback we've received on that.
Oh, great. Great.
And what beer are you putting in these barrels?
Our Russian Imperial Stout.
Russian Imperial
Stout. Okay.
And you're selling them in summertime.
Correct. Yeah. You know, seasonality really doesn't seem to be a thing too much anymore. I mean, we just put our Nitro Stout on last week, and people were coming in for that. People were asking for it. So,
you know, you're not the first brewery to mention that. It over the last 6 months, I would guess, people have been, there's three on in the bar out here already, three Imperial Stouts on. It's friggin' a billion degrees outside.
I was in Chicago at the beginning of July. The last thing I wanted was a barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stout.
But do you think that's more like this, I mean, people that are industry more so than just the common drinker, people that are just now being exposed to craft beers in different styles?
If that's their style that they know they like?
You mean the people who just got in the craft beer are driving the Russian Imperial Stout in July?
Well, like they don't really know.
Yeah.
So they're just trying, and then maybe they like it, but they don't, I don't know.
No, the people driving our Russians in the tap room right now are not newbies. These are people.
They're Trump
supporters. We get a lot of beer trade.
These are nerds.
Okay.
Oh, they're beer traders.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the beer traders coming in. You know, guys that are really deep in the game and really deep in the beer, and they hear that a brewery in Chicago in July just put a new BH Russian on. You know, they're driving halfway across the city to try it.
What do you think about the trading wars, I guess, or the trading subculture for craft beer? Do you think it's a good thing ultimately, or do you think it's kind of a bad thing ultimately?
The trading itself, I'm frankly agnostic on. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if people perceive value and they want to pay a price for something, I mean, who the hell am I to say that you shouldn't pay $100 for a bottle of beer? Now, I would never do it. I it's not for me. But
so you're not getting into the Crowler futures.
Would you charge that much?
Well, I'm just agnostic on it. I think it's a good sign that if your beer is being traded in the secondary market, that means that you're probably making
like
halfway decent beer. So
right. Yeah,
so that's a good sign. Now, what I try to stay away from though is beer traders that are in it solely for the money and then will either try to manipulate the secondary prices based on negative or positive feedbacks on a brewery that aren't actually true.
That has
impact on people's businesses and their livelihood.
That's
problematic, but. You know, I'm not involved in the trade. I really don't pay too much attention to it. Yeah. I know that it's out there. I know that our beers have been traded a little bit, which I've just taken as a good sign. But I don't really get involved in it.
Smart. You're done with that.
You know how many times higher your beer's traded for from what you sell it at the tasting room. That was your old job.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it. But, you know, But I also, you know, we've been trying really hard to build trust with our customers and the beer drinkers on the south side. So, you know, I mean, seeing the prices in the secondary market, you can't try to charge those prices in the tap room because all you're going to do is alienate people and make them upset.
No.
And, you know, I just don't think that's the right way to go about it. I don't think this is going away though. I mean, look at wine. You know, beer's being traded like wine now.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
The wine, so if you're a brewer, you just have to accept it that it exists, and continue to try to make the best beer you can. And frankly, if you look at it from if people like your beer enough to trade it and pay a premium in the price for it, I don't think that's a good sign that you're making a halfway decent beer. I think.
No. Sure. Yeah, that's true. I wonder when, just like wine, we're going to get into the counterfeit world where there's going to be like, here's a 1985 Bigfoot that I have, and it turns it's counterfeit.
It's already happened.
Really? That happened?
Oh, really?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's happened.
Huh.
I'm going to have to look that up.
You can take an empty bottle of some beer and fill it up with some crap.
Oh, right.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a few documentaries on the counterfeit wine world where this dude was, he just had a thing in his house where he was making labels.
Oh, yeah.
And he would
The movie's called Sour Grapes. It's on Netflix.
There you go. Yeah.
Great documentary.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and about every year, maybe even every 6 months, there's an article out where there's a big counterfeit wine bust in China, which is weird. Right. But like millions of dollars of wine confiscated because it's all just fake old wine.
In that Sour Grapes documentary, when they raided his house, there were just cases and cases of label-less wine with his label printer sitting right next to it.
And it's like, oh, you know what, dude? I mean, well, whatever. Just go to work being a blender. I mean, if you can recreate whatever. Anyway. Yeah. You know what else is great? Is Great Fermentations, Warren.
GR8.
They have the largest catalog of Blickman products on the web. They offer top-notch customer service, same-day shipping on many items. GreatFermentations.com. They're all over social media at GR8 Fermentation. John, real quick before I let you go, you were talking about social media real fast. It sounds like that is kind of your way, your platform to drive a lot of business. People are very positive on social media about your beers. You enjoy that aspect of marketing your John?
It's really how we've decided to build a brand. We've committed to social media. I mean, this is the way I think this is the way you sell stuff in 2018 going forward. All other marketing channels are either overpriced or dying, right? It doesn't make much sense to do radio or TV ads anymore. But
well, podcast ads are always great. And I feel like you really need to pay attention to that. So why don't we just slow down a little bit?
But the thing with social media is that if you, instead of trying to create content, if you just tell your story and you do it in an authentic way and you're honest, right, people, that's compelling to people. Yeah. So when we do a post, we try to document what's going on that day in the brewery, or what's the challenge we face this day, or something silly that happened that we try to document and then share with the people that are reading our content. And that's worked very well for us. And we do it in our voice. You know, I don't think social media is something you can outsource. You got to do it yourself because it has to be in your voice. People want to feel connected to you, and they want to know that you're genuine and authentic. And that's what we're trying to do.
I agree, man. And there's nothing I hate more than a brewery social media page that just, hey, this is what's for sale. This is what we have on, you know, to eat. Here's the tap list. So come in and try the thing. Like that's uninspired marketing, and it's really boring. Where, you know, every day we have a new. Here's the thing. Right. No, I don't care about that. If I'm following you, I'm interested in your brand, not just what I can buy from you, but what emotionally I can get out of linking up with you, with your brand. I want to know what's going on behind the scenes. That's what social media for me is for.
Right.
What's going on behind the scenes basically just everything you just said.
But websites are for information.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. If I want to know what you have for sale, I'll sign up for your email newsletter or something.
Sure.
But I want to know if you had to dump a batch, or if you had an explosion, or if people are just having fun and goofing off in the brewery, or someone put a bunch of wet grain in someone else's boots. Like, that to me is funny.
As long as they're not
We will. We will post. Like, if we do something stupid, we'll try to.
You have
in
to
a creative way talk about that. Like, if we, you know, we've done posts where we open up the wrong valve and there's, you know, 100 gallons of beer on the floor, and we feel real stupid. And,
man,
you know, fuck it, we'll take a picture of it and share that with people.
It's perfect.
You know,
I think
we try to. What's cool is that, you know, folks will come in for the first time, and I'm usually out on the taproom floor trying to talk to everybody that walks in the door. And I hear a lot that people will say, hey, I feel like I know you. We've been watching you, you know, we've been following your posts for the last 6 to 12 months. And, you know, we feel like we almost know you. And that's really nice to hear. I mean,
it's a connection.
Yeah. Here's your restraining order.
Brand and trust. Right.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Socials. Anyway, it was a weird question, but you know, you brought it up, and I'm interested about some breweries, because some breweries just avoid social media. Some companies these days just kind of avoid it, and I'm just, you know, curious to get your take on it. All right, John, I'm going to let you go, man. I really appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully we didn't keep you from anything too fun. The brewery is called Open Outcry Brewing Company. You can go to openoutcrybrewing.com and learn about everything John's doing over there in the south side of Chicago. John, anything else to add real fast before we let you go?
I just wanted to say, thank you to you guys. I mean, all the information that you all put out there for the last decade or so for the home brewing community really, really helps us, or helped me. And, I think it's inspired a lot of people to try to open up their own place. So, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for saying that. Yeah.
Hey man, if, I appreciate that. And, if you weren't listening, we wouldn't do it. So thank you for listening to all that garbage.
Yeah, cheers guys. Thanks for having me on. This is great.
All right, John, we'll talk to you, man.
Cheers.
Bye. Good
luck, John.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some nice dude doing some good stuff out there.
I got to say.
Another guy made it, thanks to the
beer. We were surprised by the New England beers, right? I mean, all in all, you had a lower bar set than what
you hit the nail right on the head. I was surprised.
Yeah.
When I saw that they were cloudy beers.
No.
Oh, you weren't saying that?
You it exceeded your expectations. I mean, really. They're
Well, when you have very negative expectations, there's nowhere to go but up.
Exactly.
I would say it was linear. I mean, I wouldn't. It exceeded my expectation, only because they had a firm bitterness, and I didn't expect that.
Well, and they're making a statement. That was his goal. He's right. Achieving. I think
that's true.
Oh, yeah,
it's
it was
admirable.
A conscious decision.
It's not wrong.
And the second one, whichever one that was.
Yeah. Did you ever figure out the order?
The order was right. I.
You were not wrong.
Yeah. At least
you verbally were wrong. What the fuck?
Physically,
that?
The glasses were right.
They were right.
Okay.
Or right,
mentally, you were incorrect.
Yes, right. As long as Kim's right.
Oh well. Yes.
That's my only hope.
6-1,
yeah,
man.
Right.
I mean, what are you going to do?
At least Kim and I's experience was the same.
It's equal.
Yes, right.
Oh, well,
whether I was right or not, who can say?
And that's the important thing.
All right, making out in the bathroom doesn't cut it anymore. Now it's.
Sure.
Do you want to try them again?
Because
they're here.
I will do that. Whichever one I had as the second one definitely exceeded my expectations.
Okay, that was...
This is
here.
Definitely the second.
The Louis Winthorpe, or maybe it was Louis Winthorpe. I don't know. That's this one.
We're about to find out.
Okay, thank God. And you know what? Speaking of thanking God...
Adam and Eve.
The city of Concord is the perfect place to start or expand your craft beer business. It's centrally located in the Bay Area. It boasts a strong craft beer loving demographic. The city's historic downtown is experiencing a boom. Concord's business and industrial parks are centrally located off major freeways and perfect for large scale brewing operations. You can give Brian Nunnally a call at 925-671-3018. He's ready to help you open up your business. In Concord.
All right. Give him a buzz.
Concord's looking, man. Trying to expand. Tap room also. You don't need to open a brewery.
Right. They want that business.
They want that business, man. You don't need to, you can come here open the next Drake's. Tasty. What do you think? You want to compete with Drake's?
Drake's is a brewery.
DrinkDrakes.com. it's a brewery, but you can open a brewery here in Concord and compete.
You too can compete.
I'd be crazy to open a brewery, but I'd love to open a tap room.
Well, you know what? That's what we should talk to the city of Concord about is changing their marketing from "We're here to help you" to "Compete with Drake's, open your brewery in Concord." Do you think that would work, or do you think that would be terrible?
I wouldn't want to do that to Drake's. I mean, what if it was better than Drake's? That wouldn't be nice.
Well, but you know, it'd be hard. First of all, it'd be hard for a new brewery to come in and start making beer better than Drake's.
Speaking of bars.
Because that bar is set really high.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think that they would enjoy the free advertising.
Oh, that's true.
What do you think?
They would.
That's
Concord.
Under the,
everybody
no.
out here would be curious about it. Well, who are these Drake's people? We need to go over there and find out.
Right. Yeah. City of Concord.
Drake's.
Compete with Drake's Brewing.
You know, San Leandro is also a city that's promoting getting beer entities into their city.
That's true.
And really?
Yeah, and if you, they already have so many. They'll give you like a $10,000 grant. I mean,
yeah, but Concord is way better.
Well, maybe they should.
Concord is way better of a city.
Maybe they should.
Tasty. Concord is way better of a city. Tasty. Concord is way better of a city to open up, okay?
All right.
If you're going to compete with Drake's, do it from Concord.
You're right. City of Concord. Compete with Drake's from a distance.
I don't think they are going to want your free marketing advice.
Someone has to.
It's free. Come on.
Let's do some feedback. I realized I didn't do any feedback before.
Wow. That's why I've been waiting this whole time.
This is from... first of all, feedback today is brought to you by the Beer Law Center. You go to thebeerlawcenter.com. John over there is waiting patiently and passionately.
Oh.
Two P's.
He's passionate about waiting.
He's patiently passionate about helping you, whatever you need to do, navigate the myriad...
Is that right?
Navigate myriad filings and all that kind of stuff, or the myriad of it, both are both. Wow. We know that because Justin decided to
callback.
Harass me, like I didn't know what I was talking about, or like I didn't have an editor to tell me. But,
how many forwards has Justin written?
None.
Right.
You know how many backwards he's written?
A lot.
I don't know what that means. Anyway, John's been a big fan of the show, big help with the show, big supporter of the show, and. You know, I wrote the foreword to his book, so... Steve McNeil writes, hello, I swear this email is not spam.
Hmm.
There's a little rural town in Newfoundland... see, never trust a Newfie, dude, first of all. In Newfoundland,
dogs.
Canada. Great dogs, weird rappers, weird trailer parks, called Dildo. Seriously.
Hmm?
There's a town in Newfoundland called Dildo.
Dildo.
And yes, it means the same thing in Canada as in the States.
Really?
Good clarification.
Hey, honey, hand me my dildo. It's like a cigar or like a knife to carve ham or something. Like, of course it means the same. Very recently, a craft brewery was opened in the town called Dildo.
Oh, boy.
It's called Dildo Brewing Company and Museum.
Wait, what?
And museum.
They moved
diversification.
They moved into the building that housed the Dildo Museum. So it was both the craft brewery and the museum.
What was in the Dildo Museum?
Well, I imagine it's like town history. Like, we have a Concord Concord Museum.
We do?
Yeah, it's like around the corner. They moved the big motherfucker. Like, 2 years ago, they moved across the street.
That building they moved, that was the museum?
It still is.
Oh, well. Still haven't been to it.
It should be called the Dildo Museum of Town History or something. Like, you can't just call something the Dildo Museum.
Why can't you?
Because you expect dildos.
Because people to show up.
Yeah.
Because I want to see dildos throughout history.
They want
to
make money on those tickets.
If I walked in there and there were not 37 dildos right in the front entrance, I would want my money back.
What do you think the town was named after? Mr. Dildo?
Well, there is... Well, have you been, Bev, to the Antique Vibrator Museum in San Francisco?
What?
I didn't know that existed.
What's the neighborhood? Field trip.
Polk Street. Which is doesn't really fit, but kind of does, actually. It's by House of Prime Rib.
Oh.
Hail.
It's go to House of Prime Rib and then walk around the corner to the Antique Vibe. Anyway, let's get back to feedback here, huh? Then we can plan our family vacations later.
Back to Dildo, Canada.
How do we get over here?
Newfoundland is a very quirky place in general with many strange places with many strange place names, including Dildo, Black Tickle, Blow Me Down, Come By Chance.
Wait, what? The city is good.
And Conception Bay.
Come By Chance.
There's definitely no place in Canada like this. I'm from another part of Canada, and most would argue there's no place like Newfoundland in the world. The whole province has a rich history, and the people are unique with an accent and local slang that most utter Canadians have difficulty understanding. That was me, but Anthony Bourdain, too soon, recently did an episode about Newfoundland on his show Parts Unknown. I thought the name alone would be reason enough to have them on the session. But it would be a great opportunity to learn about the brewing scene in Newfoundland, the culture in general, and as they say locally, get a little taste of Dildo.
We can't have Anthony Bourdain on the show anymore, though.
I have a Ouija board.
Oh, perfect.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Maybe we'll have him on the show. That'd be funny.
Yeah.
This one's called Bloody Yanks.
From the same guy?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's from Paul. You know Paul.
Oh, Paul.
No, the other Paul.
Paul?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Dear mates at the Brewing Network, I was one of the Aussie homebrewers that brought beer all the way from Australia to NHC, a.k.a. HomebrewCon 2018. We had a killer time, and I loved the feedback we got from all the peeps on our classic Aussie beers. Mine in particular was very popular. I brewed the 1935 Tooey's Oatmeal Stout from the recipe that Peter Simons wrote in his book, Bronzed Brews, and that even Charlie Papazian commented to me personally as being a very good and well-balanced beer. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Is that how Charlie sounds?
just name-dropping Charlie P. My mate Conan brewed an Australian sparkling ale, the one you are apparently creaming your jeans over.
I am?
I don't know, apparently.
Okay.
But during bottle condition... Oh, I think I had that at NHC. I think I talked about it on the last show, and maybe that's what we were... Nah, anyway. But during bottle conditioning, something got messed up, so we had to go with the Stone and Wood Pacific Pale Ale and the Cooper's Pale Ale that I also brewed. I had that. That's the beer I had. The Cooper's Pale Ale. It was pretty good. It was fine.
How were your jeans?
I wasn't wearing jeans. So,
oh, okay.
You know.
Liar.
If we wanted to showcase classic Australian beer styles, that they wanted to do, it's a bit astounding to us that you are obsessed with one of the most boring ones, i.e. Aussie Sparkling. Is it astounding to you? Because
right.
I really like boring beer.
Yeah.
As it is, for sure, in Australia, it is not as popular as the classic Cooper's Pale. Anyway, thanks for showing interest in our beer, even though the one that the Doe's Brewer made had heaps of kiwi hops in it. Yeah, so on Dr. Ho- no, oh yeah, it was on this show. I forget because I've had that guy on Dr.
Right,
Ho-
Vito
before.
Oh yeah, yeah. The beer that
Vito.
Yeah, there
Vito
was,
and Kevin or Keith.
There was no Australian ingredients in that at all, and like the very first part of the general description is showcases Australian. we have tons of great hops in Australia. We would never use Nelson Salvin or Dr. Rudy in them. I'm surprised a beer in NHC competition would score so high with ingredients so different from the style. However, as new as the style is, I guess it's very open for interpretation. Anyhow, all of us Aussies love to see you bloody seppos in Portland and having a hoot at the BN13 party at base camp as well. We love talking to all of you. I talk to Tasty, Justin, and especially Beardy.
Oh.
Brendan, not Brandon, loves all of you bloody brewing tragics.
Tragics.
I don't know. Slang.
Is that Aussie slang for something?
Yeah, it's like train wreck or something.
I think it means like super handsome, very intelligent
right.
people. Mm-hmm.
Not too fat, not too thin.
Just perfect. You are who you are.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of what happens.
I will hit you.
Yeah. Next time you see somebody and they're complaining about like whatever, look. You're not too short, not too tall, not too fat, not too thin. You are who you are. I think that's a Sesame Street.
I've heard that before somewhere.
Yeah. We had a hell of a time, and I can't. I wasn't in the feedback. We had a hell of a time. Can't wait to see you next HomebrewCon. Blah, blah, blah. That was from Paul. P.S. Aussies is pronounced like Aussies, and don't ever mention Foster's again. No one in Australia drinks it.
That's Australian for beer, right?
And he said, just for FYI, I'm a home brewer turned pro brewer with my own label, Doolittle Brewing Company, here in Sydney. All right, well.
Nice.
That sounds like it's right up Bev's alley.
thanks for hanging out, Paul. Up in Portland.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
This is apparently some critique.
Oh, boy.
I don't know.
Well, you really want to hear...
That was the subject line?
No.
First of all, do we give a shit?
The subject line is mash length question 7-10-18 episode. So already,
I don't remember 7-10-18.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Right?
I don't remember 7-10 p.m.
I had like a one week
right? Much less 7-10 the date.
Just had my warranty period.
Yeah.
Hey guys, first time emailing after about a year or so of listening and a little bit of actual learning from the tiny nuggets of beer knowledge you let slip occasionally. So already we're off to a great start. We're writing to address the barley wine discussion from 7-10. They mentioned an overnight mash and theorized whether that made a difference. Turns out Brewlosophy just did an episode on mash length and talked about the overnight mash specifically and that it does affect the fermentability of the wort. I just thought I'd throw that out there if you wanted to mention it. I suppose it's a competing beer podcast, but whatever, the shows are pretty different. Keep up the average, slightly above average work and tell Tasty to get closer to the mic.
Everybody says that.
I know. Wow. It's maddening to try and hear him and not get my eardrums blasted by JP at the same time. You're welcome, Dave. I think there actually is an issue with your soundboard because you sound totally fine. Doesn't he sound totally fine?
You guys don't notice. I'm like, yeah. Exactly.
It's not a huge difference.
Listen to the show. Listen back to the show. You sound like we threw the microphone down the hallway and kept you here in the studio.
So was it this microphone or the mix board or whatever?
I don't know. Yeah. I'll tell Jay about it.
The in-studio mix sounds fine. Nothing will happen.
So anyway, I don't know, man. The Brewlosophy podcasts are cool, and he's a cool dude. But the experiments are just—they're two dudes making stuff in their garage. I wouldn't say that this is definitely affects mash length or not from one interaction that they've done. It's not.
Yeah, it's not written in stone. Everyone chill out. 20 trials and
yeah.
I don't remember the discussion of 710 and what the verdict was. But yeah, mash length would make a difference.
How much was there? What percent more fermentability was there?
I think that's what it was. I think that's what we were saying is like he did an overnight mash for some reason. I forget why. Maybe he wanted to. Maybe he just made a mistake. But we were wondering how much that affected the final gravity. That's all. And yeah, I mean, it will a little bit. But I think I think the amount the conversion's already done in the particular time. You're just dealing with how much solubility and how the sugars are coming
out.
It's going
to be a logarithmic effect where after a certain point, the difference is going to be so minimal.
Yeah.
I think we were saying it cooled off overnight. So it went back through the temperature range, right? I think that was in that context.
Sure. Yeah.
And we thought once it got up to the denaturing temperature.
Yes.
Then it there's nothing more you can do. Well, evidently maybe he's saying no, actually, as it goes back through, it does create more fermentable.
Well, sure. It depends on what the rest temperature was as far as which lower activating enzymes were denatured. Because even at upper sacrification temperature, the more simple sugar enzymes aren't denatured yet. They're just less active than the more complex sugar enzymes. You have to go up even higher than that to actually denature the lower ones. So as it comes back down through the temperatures,
you might get them.
Yeah, those enzymes might activate a little bit more.
There you go. And now you don't have to listen to another terrible podcast. You just heard the answer.
Yeah. Take that, Marshall.
Speaking of things that aren't terrible, Neshaminy Creek has been on the Philly beer map since 2012. They're two-time GABF Vienna-style lager medal winners, and they also have a bronze for their smoked lager. They won in 2016. They have a large, expanded, and recently renovated tap room. They have 24 beers on tap, 18 of which are rotating and or seasonal. They have a variety of beer styles, free beer tour, free brewery tours on Saturday. Check them out, NeshaminyCreekBrewing.com. Jeremy over there doing some Johns with his John, man. I still got to get out there again. I want to go to a lot of places, but I don't really want to go to a lot of places. Yeah. Here's a spam of the week. It's from the Horny Hot Mom Club.
Oh, up in Canada.
Apparently, Newfoundland, I guess. But I guess if it's the Horny Hot Mom Club, it's not that new. It's old Finland. Old Finland. The subject is 100% sexy, 100% real. It is amazing, sexy dream girl.
That's
the subject.
The whole
line.
Subject.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Well, and there's four leaf clovers or three leaf clovers and some green X's, which is weird. It starts off, hey.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey. I'm unhappy and lonely, fun, sexy, horny, looking to get off.
What?
And she starts super casual and then gets right.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of baggage right up front.
Pick swap. And maybe meet if the vibe is right. I don't even want to read the rest. To be honest with you, it makes me uncomfortable to read the rest of this.
She's getting to the point.
You think that way sometimes?
Okay. Yeah. The next sentence starts with shaved. And then I'm gonna forego a couple of words in there because and then it says and ready. I just want someone who can make me happy. If you're interested, contact me anytime. There's a phone number, like a legitimate phone number. I'm gonna give out the phone number. If anyone calls it, let me know. It's 814-416-4416. And there's a bunch of links I should probably click on Justin's computer.
Yeah, probably.
Justin, we called the number.
He's already clicked all of those links.
Wow.
I am unhappy and lonely, fun, sexy, horny.
Something you got to be good at it, though. So she needs some service.
And the sad part is you know that's worked at least a few times.
Oh, there's some middle-aged dude, you know.
Have you met your sex? Of course that would.
I've met my sex. Isn't that a song?
Is it?
No.
I don't know.
You know what should be a song? Beersmith. We should write beersmith songs and like old Viking fighting tunes.
Hey, I have the band for you that could write a beersmith song.
They're called just Trappist.
Oh,
Trappist LA.
Okay.
Man, yeah, look, if the guys from Trappist are listening, write a fucking song about beersmith, please.
Oh, man.
20-day free trial. 21-day free trial. Seriously, check them out. If you haven't yet used beersmith.com, use it. Download the 21-day free. Throw a couple recipes in there. Design a recipe in the interface, and it will literally change your life. And if you don't like it, it was free. You maybe waste a little bit of time, but...
Your life still changed.
You're going to like it.
It's the best out there. If you need software, and you do, this is the one to get.
Oh, it makes your life so much easier.
It really does. And this whole entire show, well, at least part of this show, was brought to you by craftbeer.com, whose mission is to tell the stories behind America's small and independent breweries and the cities and businesses that support them. Explore the world of American craft beer at craftbeer.com. Kim, did you get a lot of social media content from this fucking stupid show?
Please? Not of you guys, on purpose, of the beers.
But they all three look the same. How are you going to differentiate?
There was a little bit of color variation.
You know, I just played Olin Hayes for days.
With a Z.
I mean, Hayes is with a Z.
But days?
No. Okay. The real days.
All right, that's better.
I do care about the English language.
Cool. Good puns. Puns are so good in beer. You know what I mean?
The Trappist is great at them. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Trappist.
It's just Trappist. It's not the Trappist, you guys.
Come on.
What the fuck is wrong with you? I kind of want to play another tune, but you guys are going to, like, make fun of it or something.
Well, yeah, but the show will be over.
Well, you know, it's
we
true.
Could rock out? We
no.
Could we?
Nobody headbangs. Stop. Nobody. You don't headbang.
Is that, like, 1990 or something?
I bet Nate headbangs.
See, if Nate does it, it's
He's
cool.
got the hair.
He's got the hair. You want to call Nate and
He's
ask if he
headbangs? Look.
Do you headbang, Nate? Nate,
come on.
Do you have
it to a straight. Which one is this?
Wolves in the Tap Room. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, there's lyrics. Hold on. Let me click on the lyrics.
Ooh.
Never saw it coming. Should have started running. No one we can trust. Douchebag jocks in a flashy tour bus.
They are the wolves in the tap room.
Fuck, all I right. love it. The gates are open. The wolves are here. Shut down the kegs. Hide all the beer. High ABV. All they want to see. Only want a buzz. Makes me wish I could call the fuzz.
Wow.
Co-opting
Did
our,
you write this?
Co-opting our culture. Descending like vultures. All in bed with InBev. I should care, but whatever.
He's pitched us this band, but it's really just him and Nate.
Yeah, unlike you, I have nothing to prove. I'll still be here when you move on. Time to sanitize. Force them all outside. Your culture is obscene. Get the fuck out of our scene.
Wow.
I love it. I think that's fucking great. And yes, maybe I did write it. What do you think?
Yeah. You should keep doing it.
All right, I think we should get out of here.
That's good.
I should get to the bathroom.
Brewers Publication is the publishing division of the Brewers Association with nearly 50 titles in print and digital format. Brewers Publications has a beer book to fit most needs. Check them out, brewerspublications.com. Oh, my God, I got two more to... The Branding Brews Podcast is a deep inside look at everything that revolves around branding and marketing a brewery. Branding Brews interviews industry professionals covering in-depth strategies and topics like labels, packaging, websites, social media, content, trademark marketing, plus much more. Whether you're in sales and marketing, you own a brewery, or you're looking to start a brewery, Branding Brews is a podcast for you. Go to brandingbrews.com or subscribe to the show wherever you like to get your podcast. I just drew something for Kim. I'm going to hand it to her.
It's her next boyfriend.
Oh, God, that's been a while.
Well, you know, nothing like the old classics, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, one last live read to read, and then we can get out of here, and then we can do
what's
whatever.
For dinner, Bebo?
What's for dinner, Bebo?
Got a plan.
Bevo's not here right now. Please leave a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you.
Beep.
The mailbox is full. Please try your call again later.
Jesus Christ, man. Yeah, it was disappointing when we tried to call you the other day on the show when you were sick, pooping your brains out.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Your voicemail message is different now.
Apparently, well, oh, I actually forgot to check.
I was disappointed.
Because I actually never changed it. It used to be me saying, hey, this is Warren.
If you want to call me back,
I haven't listened to it since I recorded it probably 10 years ago, but
that's all right.
Apparently it's a phone number now.
Well, you know, man, whatever you want to do. We have some good shows coming up here, by the way, before we get out of here.
Yeah, Heads and Tails next week.
Heads and Tails next, when is that, next week, 27th?
Maybe 2 weeks then. It's the 31st. Last day in July.
The 31st, yeah. Bull Run Distillery.
Yeah. They're up in Portland. They're doing some really cool stuff. Cool. They're getting barrels made from local Oregon trees.
Oh, wow.
And doing some really interesting barrel aging stuff up there.
That sounds good to me, man. Yeah. I appreciate that. Next week on the show, we have Four Generals Brewing. And before then, I think the last four episodes of Dr. Homebrew will be posted. They will be posted this week.
Whoa, series finale?
No. Yeah, really? God, I wish, dude.
Bonus. Yeah.
No, I finally got the shows from NHC.
Oh, okay.
I finally got them, and then I edited them today.
Okay.
So they will probably be up this week if my kid decides to start sleeping, and then I'll post the ones that we recorded like last week or week before or whatever.
So don't panic. It's not over.
Don't panic. And then on August 6th, we have Family Business Brewing, and they're from Dripping Springs, Texas, kind of right outside of Austin.
Okay.
It's the brewery, if you're fans of Supernatural,
nope.
Well, you wouldn't be. But Jensen Ackles, the star on Supernatural, started a brewery. Family Business, so it's like tied in with the show.
Oh, geez.
And I'm super excited about it. I'm like fangirl. Man. He's not going to be on the show.
Oh, no. He's not? Oh.
He's like the most handsome dude on the TV right now.
I know, which is why I asked.
Is one of the beers called It's a Damon?
No, I wish it was, but like, you know, I have so many ideas for beer names for them. I'm sure the brewer's going to be like, bro, I don't fuck. I think his name's Eric. So like, I don't fucking give a shit. I just make beer.
Right, exactly.
What is this, Comic-Con?
Like, you're the first person to tell me all of these things.
Wait, a Goza called Rock Salt? I get it. From the TV show. Fuck off.
Oh, is it a Goza?
Get out of my face. Anyway, so we have some good shows coming up, man. I'm excited about that family business. That'll be a good time.
Do you remember Four Generals? They're the ones that have the three full-time loggers.
What?
Are we getting them?
Yeah, where are they sending
us? If we get more motherfucking IPAs, dude, I'm going to be
swear
pissed.
To God.
Oh my God, I hope they send only hazy IPA. No, I will request them. They're only a 3.5 barrel brewery, and they have three full-time loggers, so I'm pretty sure those are going to be what they send us.
Good. That's dope, man. That's dope.
Thank you, guys.
All right, last but not least, everybody, Adam and Eve is determined to help you spice things up in the bedroom. You go to adameve.com, you get 50% off almost any item when you enter offer code BNARMY at checkout. You also get a free Big O kit. There's a bunch of cool stuff in there. You're going to love it. She's going to love it. He might love it. The other guy might. Who knows? Who knows who's going to love it?
All three of you.
All 10 of you. Who cares, man? There might be enough gel.
That's a big O.
Well, it's a big. It's something. It's a big load of laundry. I'll tell you that. Anyway, go to adamandeve.com. Use code BNARMY at checkout, and you get free shipping. You get one item at 50% off, and you get a free little prize there, and it's a good time. Okay. Can we get out of here? We're done?
Yes, please.
All right.
Good to be.
Thank you to John Brand from Open Outcry Brewing Company. You can go to openoutcrybrewing.com. He's in south side of Chicago. Sent over some three hazy beers, and Tasty's right. They did exceed my expectations, and they were actually, with the firm bitterness, they don't taste like the New England IPAs that everybody is making. Yeah. The same people are making the same. It's the same beer. It's the same beer. Everyone's making the same beer, not John. He's actually doing something creative with this weird style.
If this is where the style goes, there's hope for it.
Yeah. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
sky and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.